Yeah, so first of all, I want to thank the organizers for giving me this nice opportunity to speak here. It's really a pleasure to be here at PI. It's a really great place. And so I also want to thank these people on the bottom of the slide, my collaborators. So the work that I'm going to present today concerns computations that I mainly did with Yvette Fuentes, my supervisor in Nottingham. But I think that everyone else in this list here deserves a mention here, because most of these ideas were kind of an interplay of people working on different projects, shooting ideas back and forth, and I think that we somehow kind of drew from the same resources. So, and as you might find during my talk, we basically also use very similar techniques, and I got most of the ideas for all doing all this come from the interaction with these people. So, right, let's get started. What do I want to tell you about today? So, the principal question I want to address is, if we want to talk about Bogoliubov transformations of some quantum fields, we know what they are, and we use them all the time. If everyone talking about transformations from Rindler, from Minkowski to Rindler, or Unruh modes, we're always talking about Bogoliubov transformations. So the question I want to raise is, what is a simple way to deal with these things, in particular, with respect to talking about either working in a Fock space, working with Fock states, states that have some definite particle number, or rather, maybe we should work with Gaussian states, or I mean, you can work with either. I will briefly review kind of the main steps in doing that. But I want to argue today that actually maybe working with Gaussian states might be something much simpler, where we can learn intuitively what's going on with these Bogoliubov transformations. So this is what I'll try to advertise here. And I realize that I'm not the first person at this conference to speak about Gaussian states. Many talks have mentioned covariance matrices and computing these second moments. I mean, David has talked about it, and at the first day, Benny Resnick, Jason has talked about it, Angie has talked about it. So it features in a lot of talks. Tim also mentioned it. So obviously, this is something that I don't really have to oversell to you. Most of you already know this is a nice technique, we can use it. But let's just talk about how it works. All right. And then I want to show you one of the examples you can use these techniques for, which is something that we've been working on lately, which are non-uniformly moving cavities. And I'm going to briefly review how to make these cavities move non-uniformly in the first place. And if I have time, I'll show you some results of the entanglement generation we found in these cavities. Right. So let's get going. The Bogoliubov transformation, first we have to talk about some quantum fields. Let me talk about the simplest situation. We consider some scalar field, which is decomposed in this way, like up here. So you have some annihilation operators, creation operators, you have your field modes. It's all very standard. The only thing I really want to assume now is that we have some discrete spectrum. So we have a sum here instead of an integral. And let's say that these results, I'm sure they work well for all discrete fields. But at the same time, let me say that, OK, maybe there are some situations in which you can apply some kind of effective discretization to actually use these techniques, even when you have a continuous spectrum to begin with. Right, so then the Bogoliubov transformation, what is it doing? Well, so we have our mode functions, and we transform them from some in region to some out region. So the in region functions I will call, denote by phi n, and then I'll put a tilde on top to denote the out region functions. And they're related by some transformation that has coefficients, alphas, and betas. And obviously, we can relate the operators as well. So we simply write down, say, a creation operator, and we can decompose this creation operator now into creation operators in the out region and annihilation in the operators in the out region. So as you all know well, the role of the alphas is then some kind of generalized rotation. So the alphas will take some pre-existent excitation of a field mode and kind of switch it to a different mode, while the role of the betas is more particle creation. So the betas relate annihilation and creation operators, thereby changing the particle content of whatever we have, right? So yeah, and we know how to compute, well, at least we know how to write down how to compute these coefficients. So we can formally write the alphas and betas in terms of some inner product. Let me call it inner product. And I mean, writing down this expression is fairly simple. Usually where it gets difficult is to actually, you know, sit down and really compute these coefficients for some situation. But let me assume for the scope of this talk that you just give me some alphas and betas, all right? So you have computed some alphas and betas, you give them to me, and then you want to know, well, what can I do with that in the sense of quantum information? Right, so what do we do usually when we deal with Fock states? So, well, we know how to relate the initial vacuum, so zero, to the tilde, the out region vacuum. There is some well-known transformation that does that for us, so we have some operator here that does it. And, well, to get particle states, well, it's clear. We just apply our creation operator, which we specify in terms of the alphas and betas. And what I didn't say here is that, of course, this matrix B here, it is constructed from the alpha and beta coefficient. So it's not an additional thing you put in there, but you really construct it from the alphas and betas you were given. Right, and then we follow the usual steps and say, oh, well, this is all straightforward. We just select some state in the in region, transform it to the out region. But then, well, here comes the tricky bit. We have to trace out some inaccessible modes usually, unless we want to consider an infinite number of modes, which we usually don't. So this tracing procedure is the bit where it gets tricky, because usually it's complicated. So even in the cases that we do like that we can actually compute, this is the bit that is computationally complex, let's say. Right. Once we have done that, yes, then we can study entanglement properties or other properties we want. Right. Now let's contrast that with Gaussian states. So for a Gaussian state, it's completely enough, at least if we want to talk about the entanglement, to talk about the second moment. So we talk about an object, which is the covariance matrix, which is just this combination of expectation values of some operators. So I've here put some generalized positions and momenta. And this is something that's very straightforward to compute. It's well known, techniques are known to deal with it. And now let's apply our Bogle-Lyubov transformations, because I just showed you, well, how do we transform in a Fock state? How do we transform this? Well, actually, it's quite simple. So the Bogle-Lyubov transformation is a unitary transformation. So it is represented on the phase space by some symplectic transformation S. So we just take our initial covariance matrix, and we put these symplectic matrices here and get our transformed state of all modes. And the decomposition of this S matrix in terms of the Bogle-Lyubov coefficients, it just looks like this. So there are some matrices here that tell you how each mode is being related to a different mode by the Bogle-Lyubov coefficients. And it has a rather simple form. So given the alphas and betas, you plug them into these M matrices. You construct your S. That's it. All right, so let's continue with this. So then our transformed, so let's say we start with some covariance matrix. You can pick some nice Gaussian state you like. You can take a thermal state, coherent state, the vacuum. You can put squeezing in, whatever you prefer. And it will have this form up there, where obviously, I mean, I'm being very general here, right? This form, yeah, it couldn't look any different. And then you transform it to your out region. So you get something like this, where you have these tildes up here. And these tilde, C tilde things, So once you have done the transformation, you want to trace out. But the tracing is trivial for Gaussian states in this covariance matrix formalism, because tracing literally means just getting rid of columns and rows that correspond to modes you want to trace over. So once you have actually this expression, you have everything you need, and the tracing is just like a formality. Okay, and the decomposition of these elements of these C tilde matrices here is simply given in terms of these M matrices that contain alphas and betas, as I showed you. So it looks rather straightforward, but as you can imagine, for a discrete spectrum, you can assume that, oh, this is a nice sum, you know how to do it, if the sum is convergent, everything is fine. For a continuous case, usually you get an integral, and well, it begs the question maybe, first of all, well, does this construction really work with the continuous spectrum, and if it works, and you put in these integrals, do the integrals converge, or do they explode? Right. But, I mean, the procedure to do it for a discrete set of modes, that's rather simple. And then you go ahead and compute whatever entanglement measure you prefer. So you can pick whatever you like. We lately have been using the negativity, and I'm going to use the negativity for the rest of the talk. But in principle, pick the one that you think suits your situation best. Okay, that's it. So I think this is a rather simple argument to say, well, actually working with covariance matrices is much simpler in this context than doing really complicated Fox state transformations. All right, so let's go to the second bit. I want to show you how we do it with our cavities, and in particular how we construct these trajectories. So we take an initial cavity that's just basically two boundary conditions at A, at x equal A and x equal B. We put the quantum field in. It's quantized, so we have a discrete spectrum as before. We have some commutation relations for our creation and annihilation operators. And then we want to move this cavity. So what we do is we have to use Rindler coordinates. And I'm really just showing this picture because I think it's mandatory for this conference to put a picture of the Rindler wedges. But you all know this. So we have to accelerate our boundaries of the cavity. So we do this. We start with our initial inertial cavity, and we accelerate the walls such that the cavity remains rigid. So whoever is traveling with the cavity always sees the same length of the cavity in his rest frame. So in order to do this, we have to pick two different accelerations, as you can maybe guess from this picture. Right. And then we say, well, accelerating is fine, but we really want to stop accelerating at some point. We don't want to accelerate forever, because we really don't have the money to pay for all that rocket fuel. So let's stop accelerating. I was getting ahead of myself. So sorry. So in principle, we know how to compute these transformations now. So we quantize the field in the Rindler region of this accelerated trajectory. And in principle, now we apply exactly the stuff I told you in the beginning, which is we do Bogoliubov transformation, where we relate computer coefficients that relate the initial modes with these out-region modes, basically. But these things I have already shown you. This is exactly what I did before. And as I said now, we want to stop accelerating. So to do that, we just, well, stop. The cavity goes inertial. The initial cavity width, the final cavity width, are related by some by Lorentz contraction factor. If you're a guy, say, sitting at the origin looking at this cavity, the person traveling with the cavity always sees the same length of this cavity. He just says, oh, my cavity is rigid. That's nice. So we stop accelerating. And now the question is how we compute these transformations that go from this region to that region up here. So what we do is the following. Well, we know how to do this transformation here. But really, this whole picture, we can shift it by Lorentz boost, more or less. And we know how to do the transformation that steps from the accelerated region to the final inertial region. So the only thing we have to insert in this to make it work is a phase factor that takes care of the time evolution in this middle bit. And that's it. So now, if you want, you can construct any kind of trajectory that is made out of these segments that consists of inertial and uniformly accelerated motion. And this is basically something that you heard already in David's talk. So now we can ask how generally can we construct these trajectories, get these resonances, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So what do we find in what results do we find? Well, working perturbatively in the alphas and betas. So turns out for this situation, if you really want to do the computation, you work perturbatively in a parameter that is given up here. So I've written here h, which is 2b minus a b over b plus a, where b, a and b are the boundaries of the cavity. What it really is, you can rewrite this as a product of the acceleration at the center of the box times the width of the cavity. And then there's this nasty 1 over c squared factor that we all encountered already during this conference. But in principle, we work perturbatively in this factor. And arguably, that's a good thing to do, because 1 over c squared makes this a nice approximation, right? So we then use these Gaussian techniques to compute the entanglement, and we find the following. Well, if you start from the vacuum, you create entanglement that is proportional to the modulus of this beta coefficient that relates the two modes that you want to consider. So you start with infinitely many modes. You do your transformation, then you look at two particular modes, k and k prime, and this is the entanglement you get from the initial vacuum state. But okay, the vacuum state is, you know, it's a fairly simple starting point, but why not go to something more complicated? For example, we could put initial single mode squeezing into these two modes we want to consider. And then this is what we get. It looks a bit more complicated, but don't be intimidated by it, because if you notice that you put the squeezing parameter s to 0, what happens is really just that, well, this thing dies, and then you're just left with a 1 here, so you have real part squared plus imaginary part squared squared of this, so you really reduce it to this thing here. So what the squeezing does is really you put in the alpha coefficients here, which generally enhances the whole effect, in addition to having having an enhancement by really having these hyperbolic functions in there. So just to conclude, how does this look like? Well, initial single mode squeezing enhances the entanglement generation. But these results you can obtain very simply with the Gaussian techniques. And this is what I kind of, this is the idea I want to leave you with. So let me just put the last conclusion slide. I hope I've argued here that we have some useful techniques for quantum fields with discrete spectra. We can obtain these results analytically, so given the alphas and betas, everything is nice and simple. And for the Gaussian states, really everything is determined by the second moment, so you don't run into any trouble there. And in particular, for this example with the cavities, you can work perturbatively in this parameter that goes like 1 over c squared. You can construct the generic class of trajectories. And a nice feature that appears in some sentences, you have this, you have a periodic structure, at least for 1 plus 1 dimensional massless fields. And then you can ask, how can I enhance these effects? How can I make these things maybe visible, testable? Well, you can put in mass in your field. You can put in initial squeezing. And as David told you a couple days ago, you can actually find resonances to enhance the effects. So it's maybe within reach of something we might be able to do at some point. So with this, I want to thank you for your attention. Thanks.